Exhibition Essay by Dr. Amy Tobin, Tender Ropes for Queen Green. Cloudiness. What is cloudiness? It is a lining. It is a roll. Is it melting? Grids are art's foundations, not clouds. Grids rule perspective, naturalistic drawings, and the searching gaze of the picturesque. They are also the substance of abstraction, even if skewered, or present only as frame or weave. They are the matrices for sculpture. They map place for spatial design. Grids signal control in art, as in life, as the substrate for beauty and expression, and as the mechanism for containing. Trellises are grids, used by garden designers to harness nature, and particularly to train climbing plants and trees to create bowers that screen parts of the garden from view. Bowers have association with pleasurable seclusion and erotic relation. In Edward Spencer's The Faerie Queen, the decadent Acrasia holds court in her Bower of Bliss. A place occupied by women who wrestle wantedly with one another, exposed only by the knight Guyon, who encounters the scene during his virtuous quest. Guyon destroys the Bower of Bliss, but the phrase remains a synonym for vagina and vulva, replete with associations of dangerous sexuality and erotic pleasure beyond reproduction. The works assembled in Queen Green form a new Bower of Bliss. In a room that was once the verdant conservatory of Woodend, the residence of the Sitwell family. Appropriately, these works are the products of the inaugural Dalby Forest Artist Residency, an initiative that brings artists to engage with the Sitwell's historic house, along with the collections of Scarborough Museums Trust and the Dalby Forest. Green braids together referential threads from across these sites, including the characteristic architecture of the observatory building, doubled and made into a nymph's bra, or objects from the Clark Charm collection and costume archive, which inspired the trellis form. Astrological and enchanted elements combine in this bower, where nymph guardians appear as watercolour figures processing the room's perimeter, summoned like their mystic counterparts to capture mortal attention and hold us in relation. Green's shimmering figures escape their papery confinement. Pooled ink is stilled but still refracts the light. They mirror us, so as we move, they do too, like partners in a dance. For the young Edith Sitwell, it was this room, rather than any typical ballroom, as well as the grounds around Woodend at Lonsborough Lodge and at Renshaw Hall in Derbyshire, that captured her imagination. In her later poetry, she wove together elements from an enchanted natural world with folk tales and avant-garde abstractions. Light green, Sitwell imagined figures through forms gleaned from the landscape. In spring, she writes, by a maiden fair as an almond tree, with hair like the waterfalls, goat locks, she has lips like the jangling harsh pink rain, the flower bells that spite on the gut trees again. Seasonal change, particularly spring, were important for Sitwell. They meant transformation in the natural world, and she summoned this power against what she saw as the static description of nature in the popular poetry of the early 20th century. Sitwell wanted to elicit a new kind of relationship to the world, based on not knowing. I used the language of another, and by this means attempted to pierce down the essence of the thing seen, by discovering in it attributes which at first sight appear alien, but which are acutely related. One of the ways that Sitwell makes things relate is through rhyme. The couplets in spring are tied together by those end-line rhymes, like a patterns of sound. In poetry, metre often serves to bind things together. Sitwell used it to connect the animal with the vegetable and the human, but never to hold the natural world in abeyance or in thrall to the human. As in Sitwell's facade, the maid sighed, all my blood is animal. They thought I sat like a household cat, but through the dark woods rambled I. Here, the poetic pattern, Sat Cat, does not contain the mane's animal blood, but intensifies its release. Transposed into the visual world, Green's work is also about relating, training, binding, and holding. It is also about containment and release. Figures are often made of component parts, high-heeled boots, long whip-like braided hair, patterned or brightly coloured bodysuits, long gloves, geometric glasses, defined and rough lips. These glamorously clad figures suggest other ways of being, in imagined spaces that might allow for fantasy. In previous works, these figures have manifested in the social world of parties and nightclubs as transcendent goddess beings, defiant decorated bodies who are weightless, free, unbounded. Green's figures are sometimes delineated by the paper or canvas edge, framed by a watercolour box like a playing card. They also appear in relief against diaphorous clouds of paint, bodies merging with another or with their environment. Her more recent articulated figures, made of hand-formed coloured tissue paper and shaped into body, seem to escape their support. Attached directly to the wall, they enter our space. Their curvy edges, rippled surfaces, link lips, chain and ribbon bindings imagine, almost contradictory, how embodied feelings can be enhanced by clothing, by impossible or restricted movement, and by other body parts. These figures' limbs, lips, breasts and phalluses merge and multiply or are held in suspension in, as if in felt or fantasized, euphoria. Green has an avatar linked to this series, Susie Unbound, 2020, with leopard print legs and frilly elbow-length gloves, whose body has merged with a puffed-up cloud-like form that lends her the power to float atmospherically. She expands transcendentally to be more and to feel more like a queen. She goes beyond the limits of the fleshy body, empowered if not masterful. The art historian Hubert Damisch argued that a theory of clouds, or cloud, as he stylized it, offered a lens to write a history of painting. For Damisch, the cloud, as a surfaceless body, provided a challenge to the ordering principles of Western perspectivism that met their apotheosis in the grid. Damisch writes that the cloud seems to call into question, thanks to its absence of limits and through the solvent effects to which it lends itself, the coherence and consistency of a syntactical ordering, or, in other words, representation. Clouds cannot be manifested in schemata of celestial perspectives, Damisch suggests, but they might appear to confuse rational ordering and to signal the fantastical. In Queen Green, Susie Green's clouds motif appears again on one of the trellises that holds her majestic figures. Rather than contain the cloud form or the tree or the flower, these structures bind bodies to nature, portals for becoming, cloud-like, tree-like, flower-like. They are thrones for queens, earthly figures assuming new positions, bound by tender ropes, shaped by nature. Queen Green is not one person. She is an artist. She is Sitwell. She is reimagined Mother Earth. These queens are Sitwell-esque, changelings who wear a crown like the poet's own headpiece. One element of her self-presentation aimed to mark her out as existing on the periphery of human society, and eccentric like her friend and fellow writer Gertrude Stein. Sitwell invited Stein to come to England in 1926 to lecture at the universities of Oxford and Cambridge. The effect was as Sitwell wanted it. Stein caused a sensation. Despite its many differences, Sitwell's and Stein's poetry share an aversion to naturalism in favour of a new kind of attention to the surrounding world. If Sitwell turned to the power but familiarity of the natural world, then Stein looked to the everyday bringing everything into the poem in new syntactical relations. In her book Tender Buttons, which is made up of three poems, Objects, Food and Rooms, Stein recounts the words around her as seen and sensed, rather than as known. Stein's word systems state the impossibility of arriving at the meaning. even as countless meanings present themselves to our attention. Her writing also offers up new ways of feeling, new ways of relating to rooms, food and objects. Where buttons are tender, the sensorial possibilities that Stein opens in her poetry are evident in Green's figures, who present different ways of being on Vatinius Hills, or as part cloud, or tied up with rope. In Queen Green, these figures are transformed by a majestic ecology in which bodies are parts tethered by tendril-like ropes and breasts, genitals and bottoms become cloudy or vegetal, no longer solely human. The artists Annie Sprinkle and Beth Stevens have described this way of being in relation to nature as ecosexual. Their ecosexual manifesto, which provided a guide and companion for Green during her residency at Dalby Forest, reads, "The earth is our lover. In order to create a more mutual and sustainable relationship with the earth, we collaborate with nature. We treat the earth with kindness, respect and affection. We make love to the earth through our senses." Sprinkle and Stevens' ecosexuality offers a vision of non-human relationships turned towards the politics of protecting the planet. In an invitation to rethink how we relate to the earth, how we care for it, as well as how we might take respectful pleasure from it, in the face of the violent exploitation of resources. Take their definition of wind play, for example. Enjoying the wind blowing on your body, such as the gentle wind blown through your hair on a spring day. But it is also a way to rethink sexual pleasure beyond normative sex acts and roles. They encourage us to experiment with an eco-sexual gaze, which means to look at the world with the awareness that sex is happening everywhere. This invitation to level lovemaking and pollination returns us to Queen Green's Bower of Bliss, where pleasurable sensation circulates not only between secluded figures, but also the trees and flowers and clouds. This essay was commissioned as part of the exhibition Queen Green by Susie Green, running from November the 20th, 2001 to February the 27th, 2002 at Woodend Gallery, Scarborough, with Crescent Arts and Scarborough Museums Trust, funded by Arts Council England.